I grew up about an hour from Orlando, with a Disney enthusiast for a mother. That means the trips to theme parks were a regular occurrence for us. I imagine that, for many families, it is the children asking the parents to take them to Disney. For us, it was more likely the reverse, with me and my sister being asked if we wanted to go. Don't get me wrong, though. I did enjoy our outings. Since we were Florida residents, and since this was a pretty long time ago, annual passes were fairly affordable. We'd go usually at least a couple of times a month, even if it was only for a few hours. Perhaps the most well-known park is Disney's Magic Kingdom, the first park built in Orlando. The second park built by Disney in Orlando, though, is Epcot Center. Epcot is actually an acronym and stands for Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow. As a community of tomorrow, many of Epcot's rides and attractions showcase the interaction between technology and science on the one hand, and its impact on communities on the other hand. The Epcot Globe is the largest and most iconic attraction there, and inside is a ride called Spaceship Earth. The idea is that you sit in a small cart and move slowly through many different scenes that shows the advancement of human technology, and in particular, the advancement of communications technology. So first you are shown cavemen drawing on a wall, then the invention of the alphabet, then the invention of the printing press, and so on and so on. The very last thing that was shown was a prediction of the future. One day, according to this Disney ride, we will attach cameras to our phones, and then we can call people anywhere in the world, and not just hear their voice, but see a live video of them as well. As a 7-year-old, I remember wondering if I would be an old man by the time that ever happened. Well, in reality, we've been doing it for some time now, and it's very common. People can call friends, conduct business, take classes, whatever, via video chat. Pretty much any new phone or computer nowadays is easily capable of such communications. Living across an ocean from my family, this technology is particularly important to me. Technological advancements truly do change the way that people live. Just a few weeks ago, Apple marked the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone. That means we have a lot of children still in our heyday that were born before the iPhone. Yet how many people have come to rely on their iPhone or some other smartphone that followed it? A year ago, the BBC reported that 80% of British adults owned one. We now have more knowledge accessible to us in a format that fits in our pockets than was available to all of humanity just a short time ago. The faculty of some of the greatest universities in the world are now teaching interactive classes viewable on these phones. I've heard that some people are also using their phones for games. I'm sure we're all much more interested in those lectures, though. But technology is simply a tool. Just a way for us to do new things or do old things a bit easier. That's all. It's neither all good nor all bad. In fact, many times, new technologies bring not just benefits, but also some problems as well. For example, technology changed the way we produce and consume food. Once upon a time, people were hunters and gatherers. Then they invented farming and shepherding and so on. All the way until today, when you can buy almost anything you want in the supermarket, no matter the season, and no matter what part of the world it came from. Many thousands of people in Britain go hungry on a regular basis, and this is a problem that should challenge us all and needs a solution. However, look at the famines that once plagued people. The biblical book of Genesis records multiple famines. One of them brought the early Israelites down to Egypt in search of food. They ended up settling there, only to be enslaved by Pharaoh a few generations later. In more recent times, the Great Famine of 1845 to 1852 left 1 million people in Ireland dead. Could you imagine a famine like that hitting Ireland today? Or anywhere else in Europe or North America? I remember one year in Florida, there was a particularly deep freeze one night, and it killed off a lot of the orange crop. That didn't mean Floridians went without oranges, though. The supermarkets just brought them in from California or elsewhere. Now, they weren't as good, of course, nothing beats pure Florida orange juice, but they were available. Not only that, but even Mother Nature can't always stop people from growing food where one might assume it's impossible. Drought used to mean hunger. But take a trip to the Negev in Israel. Parts of it seem as barren as anywhere in the world, but drip irrigation technologies allowed for it to be farmed. Hunger has not been eliminated, but technological advancements have made it so that it's not the same problem that it was. However, alongside the abundancy of food for most people is a new problem. An increasing percentage of the population is facing obesity issues that contribute to a number of other health problems. Unhealthy food is cheap, convenient, and addictive. I've heard some people say that sugar is the new tobacco. But this is not a sermon about food and health. Many of you know more about that than I do. It's about technology, and specifically how technology affects us all, and affects the Jewish community in particular. Synagogues are increasingly making use of new technologies. Have you been to our website or Facebook page recently? If not, head over there and take a look. There's a video posted every single week, no more than 5 minutes long, teaching about a lesson from the Torah. This year, I'm also starting to make audio recordings of the adult education classes that I'm teaching and posting them to our website. We are also in discussion to start streaming our services online, as many other synagogues already do. For years now, I've been using that same video conferencing technology that Disney portrayed as the future to occasionally work with bar and bat mitzvah students. There are at least two major benefits to using some of these technologies. The first is accessibility. There are a number of people who, for one reason or another, have a difficult time being at the synagogue in person. Video recordings, video chat, audio recordings, and streaming in time will assist people to virtually participate in what they might otherwise not be able to. This includes people who have disabilities or health issues. But it also includes synagogue members whose job prevents them from attending at a certain time, or whose family responsibilities make it challenging to attend a committee or board meeting at 8 p.m., or who live some distance from the shul where regularly commuting is not feasible. All of these technologies make the synagogue more accessible to people who otherwise would not be able to attend. A second major benefit is outreach. There are a lot of people, and the number is only growing, who begin their search for Jewish life online. If we want to welcome people, we need to meet them where they are, and many of them are on Facebook, YouTube, and so on. Plenty of people might want to check out a place online before actually visiting in person. Maybe they are not familiar with Reform Judaism, or maybe they just want to have an idea of what they can expect before coming. The easier we can make it for a person to feel comfortable to come to the synagogue for the first time, the better. The Reform Movement, in partnership with the Assembly of Reform Rabbis, is working on offering an online conversion class. In fact, it's been in a trial phase for a little while now, and graduates are already making their way to the Beit Din, the rabbinic panel that approves conversions. This online class is meant to be just that, a class. It does not fulfill any of the other requirements for conversion, such as participation in person at a community. But the questions are already coming forward. Just how much of Jewish living can be done online, virtually? Any one thing done online, such as classes, services, committee meetings, and so on, seems worthwhile. I can't think of a strong enough reason not to do it compared to the benefits. But what if everything is online? Do we lose something? Is there an equal substitute for spending time with other people face to face? I suppose not, which is why Jody and I sometimes travel back to America to visit family. Now, I use Facebook, YouTube, and everything else, probably too much. So lest there is any doubt, I just want to say, I use it too. However, I sometimes wonder if our growing reliance comes with a cost. Some parents in our synagogue, with children older than Asher, have confided in me that they have a hard time telling their teenagers to turn their phones off after 10 p.m. They tell me that if they made their children do that, they'd be the only ones not communicating, and that is the core of their social life. and they may be right. There was a recent article by San Diego State University professor of psychology Gene Twenge in The Atlantic titled, "How the Smartphone Destroyed the Generation." She writes about a teenager she interviewed named Athena. She says, "Athena and her friends spend time together on their phones, unchaperoned. Unlike the teens of my generation, who might have spent an evening tying up the family landline with gossip, they talk on Snapchat, the smartphone app that allows users to send pictures and videos that quickly disappear. They make sure to keep up their snap streaks, which show how many days in a row they have Snapchatted with each other. Sometimes they save screenshots of particularly ridiculous pictures of friends. It's good blackmail," Athena said. She told me she'd spend most of the summer hanging out alone in her room with her phone. "That's just the way her generation is," she said. "We didn't have a choice to know any life without iPads or iPhones. I think we like our phones more than we like actual people." Professor Twenge goes on to cite various studies about the effects of prolonged time in front of a screen and happiness in teenagers. She says, "The results could not be clearer. Teens who spend more time than average on screen activities are more likely to be unhappy, and those who spend more time than average on non-screen activities are more likely to be happy. There's not a single exception. All screen activities are linked to less happiness, and all non-screen activities are linked to more happiness. Eighth graders, that's the equivalent of year 9, who spend 10 or more hours a week on social media are 56% more likely to say they are unhappy than those who devote less time to social media. Admittedly, 10 hours a week is a lot, but those who spend 6 to 9 hours a week on social media are still 47% more likely to say they are unhappy than those who use social media even less. The opposite is true of in-person interactions. Those who spend an above-average amount of time with their friends in person are 20% less likely to say they are unhappy than those who hang out for a below-average amount of time. The more time teens spend looking at screens, the more likely they are to report symptoms of depression. If you were going to give advice for a happy adolescence based on this survey, it would be straightforward. Put down the phone, turn off the laptop, and do something, anything, that does not involve a screen. This is just one more thing for Jody and I to worry about as Asher gets older. There was an animated Pixar film named WALL-E that came out 9 years ago already. In it, humanity fled a polluted Earth and now reside on what is essentially an interstellar cruise ship. Except, people seldom talk to one another face to face. Rather, they are consumed with their devices. Countless people were all right next to each other, but they did not interact face to face. As the film continues on, it's clear that it's not the destruction of Earth's environment that makes the people on the spaceship unhappy. It's that they're so consumed with everything that they barely notice the people around them. They see people on their screens, they hear them, but they do not have face-to-face interaction. When they finally do, things start to turn around and people become happier. Like I said before, I believe in the benefits that technologies, including social media, streaming video, and so on, have to offer. But we need to have a conversation about the Torah of technology and develop some new wisdom about how technology can enhance our communal life rather than subtract from it. Jews before us had to take Jewish values and apply them to new situations. That's why Jewish life today looks so different from Jewish life in the written Torah, with its animal sacrifices, its priesthood, and its prophets. Only a few times in the last couple of millennia have things changed so much, so quickly. Questions that we need to ask are, how do we use technology to create, sustain, and nourish community, rather than undermine it? How do we make sure that our values of treating others with respect carry over to the world that allows a greater deal of anonymity? How do we not cocoon ourselves in an online bubble so that we only hear voices and opinions like our own? How do we prevent online spaces becoming safe spaces for intolerable prejudices, hatred, and extremism? There are more questions, I'm sure, and we'll all need to be thinking both of the question, but also the answer. These are serious questions that need real debate, informed by Jewish values and tradition. After God creates Adam, God says, "It is not good for Adam to be alone." What does it mean to be alone, though? Can online interactions prevent loneliness, or done too much, can they cause it? The rabbinic sage Hillel the Elder said, "Do not separate yourself from the community." Can the community be entirely virtual, though? I mentioned before that one of the big benefits of new communications technologies is that it increases accessibility to Jewish life. That's important, and if it were the only benefit, dayenu, that would be enough. We can't rely on it too much, though. That's why I think the synagogue's transport fund is so necessary. And don't be afraid to use it. It helps to bring people to participate in our community in person. If you have a hard time getting around, don't fret. Take a cab and give us the receipt, please. We have the money and we want you at shul. No one will ever know, not that it makes a difference. If you want to know how, talk to Pauline, our excellent Caring Community Chair, or anyone with the Caring Community, or me, and we'll tell you how to take advantage of it. But beyond the transport fund, I have just one more thing to say. Epcot's Spaceship Earth tells the story of communications technologies bringing people ever closer together. That is ultimately the goal, bringing people together. Technology does help with that. It's essential, really. But it's not enough. We need to come together. And for us, that means we need you at the synagogue, in person. It doesn't have to be all of the time, but we need you at least some of the time. Come to a Shabbat service. Come to an adult education course. Come to Social Center. Come to our Macmillan Coffee Morning. Bring your children to the Gan or Cheder or Youth Club. Come to anything, but come, and come again. If you can't find anything that speaks to you, help us to create new ways of doing things. We need leaders, too. We all need our community, and the synagogue is a great community. We are a community with a purpose: to sustain Jewish living and learning, values, and vision. You can find out more about what's on our website. And if you'd like to hear this sermon again, it will also be posted online after Rosh Hashanah concludes, along with many other interesting, worthwhile articles, videos, and audio recordings. Shana Tovah.